Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of F This Movie, the podcast for grown men who live in their parents' basement.
The podcast that George Lucas will digitally remove me for a funnier Doug.
Do you think?
What's to stop him?
Nothing.
Exactly.
Nothing can stop that guy. My name is Patrick Brownlee. I'm joined tonight by the soon-to-be digitally replaced Mike Pomero. How are you?
I'm good, Patrick. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. We are broadcasting, of course, from my basement, so please don't take the opening of the show as a derisive comment in any way. Basements are where it's at. Mm-hmm. F This Movie, you can find our website at fthismovie.blogspot.com in the iTunes store by searching F This Movie. Follow us on Facebook. Facebook.com/FThisMovie, Twitter.com/FThisMovie, DVDVerdictPresents.com, and you can email us at FThisMoviePodcast@gmail.com. I want to mention something about Twitter, too, because I don't really run the Twitter. Mm-hmm. I don't quite get the Twitter. I won't say who runs the Twitter because he likes to remain elusive, but it's someone on our show. And earlier this week, one of our listeners, this is a fun Twitter story, one of our listeners, Randy, tweeted something sort of unbeknownst to us that apparently she is dating a guy, and she tweeted, like, I told the guy I'm dating that he should listen to F This Movie because he likes movies. And he responded, I already do.
Ooh.
So that is awesome, and we thank Randy, and we love Randy. And we're bringing people together.
I was going to say, I feel like we're responsible for that.
Yeah. So really, if you guys get married, listen, I don't want to rush you guys. No. Maybe it's early. I don't know. I don't want to rush you guys. But if you do get married and you want us to do a podcast at your wedding, that's fine. Or even just in honor of your wedding. Like
F This Wedding.
Yeah. Or like if they have a movie together, you know how some couples have like a song together, like yours and your wife's is November Rain. Like...
I wish.
If you guys have a movie together and you're like, oh, can you F This Movie in honor of our wedding? We'll do it because we love our fans and we feel like we know a lot of you guys through the Twitter and the Facebook and the emails.
Absolutely.
So we appreciate all of your comments. I'm curious to know what your movie together is, guys. So please email us or let us know, Randy and new boyfriend. What is your movie together?
Mine, Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know if Erica and I have one. We probably have a bunch, but
yeah,
none really like as cool as one of the Star Wars movies.
I don't know if my wife would agree that that's our movie, but
she would.
Yeah, maybe.
It's either that or a Goofy movie, right? It's
yes.
One of those two,
or Hocus Pocus,
or Hocus Pocus. What's the other one she loves? Willow.
She loves Willow.
That's what I thought.
We can go on and on. I remember when we first started dating, I went over to
you
her.
And me.
Yes, when you and I first started dating, yeah. I left your house to go to my now wife's house, and she was watching Empire Strikes Back by herself, and I sat and was watching it with her and noticed that she was mouthing the words.
Nice.
Movie, so that was when the Thunderbolt hit me, as they would say in The Godfather.
Yes.
So,
all right.
So that's why I would say that's our movie. Again, I don't know if she would agree, but.
All right. We'll get her on the show and we'll ask her.
Okay.
Just kidding. She'll never be on the show.
Ever.
Just kidding. Hey, Mike, have you seen anything good lately? Or have you seen anything lately? How's that?
I was thinking about that on the way over here, that a lot of what I've seen lately has been covered recently on this very podcast.
Sure.
Except Tinkerbell and the Great Fairy Rescue.
Oh,
but
okay.
I figured you'd want to do.
We're doing a show on that.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I figured I wouldn't blow it.
Yeah.
My wife and I, who just spoke of,
yeah,
did finally get around to seeing Harry Potter. And if you haven't listened to Doug and Patrick's Harry Potter podcast, please seek it out because it is great. And I just wanted
to
speak briefly on that, that I just wanted to echo what you were saying, and I think Doug agreed with you, that I really liked it. Thought it was really good, a very good ending to a series that I enjoy very much, the books and the movies. But that epilogue at the end.
Yeesh.
Really bugged me.
Yeah.
And I read the books, and it bothered me in the book.
Yeah.
But more so in the movie, when, it's spoilers for Harry Potter, but when they defeat Voldemort. And
whoa.
And there's this moment where Ron, Hermione, and Harry are together, and Hermione stands between the two of them, and they all hold hands. And it's just the three of them sort of surrounded by this, by a Hogwarts, which has been completely destroyed. And it's just, that moment is about them and what they've been through. You know, it's sort of what's ahead. But it was just such a great great shot that I wish they would have closed on that shot. And then we get this epilogue and they, you know, see their kids off to school. And then it ends with another shot of the three of them. But to me, that last shot, they're so disconnected.
Right.
From one another that it just.
Yeah, that the shot of the three of them at the end there, like, is meaningless.
Yeah, it is. And that was so disappointing to me.
Yeah.
That was a bummer. But besides that, I really, really liked it. And I thought, and who would have thought, because David Yates' first was
Order of the Phoenix.
Order of the Phoenix, which is probably my least favorite.
Mine too, I think.
Correct. And then, but he followed that up with Half-Blood Prince, which is my favorite. And
mine.
And I really like, I really liked Deathly Hallows 1 and 2. So he, little worried after Order of the Phoenix. But
yeah,
he,
right.
Definitely came through.
I liked Deathly Hallows a lot while I was watching it, although I have to admit that I've kind of forgotten it, and maybe it's just a symptom of, like, the summer movie season where it's this new big thing that's in your face every single week,
right.
And so that was 8 event movies ago that I've, because I've kind of forgotten it, even though I liked it when I was watching it.
Yeah, I was a fan.
And it was one of 2 movies done in by a terrible epilogue this summer, the other being Captain America.
Yes.
Which also has a perfect shot to close on and blows it with people in old age makeup. Just kidding. There's no one in old age makeup in Captain America. What else have you seen besides Harry Potter?
I always feel like I get yelled at on this podcast for trying to talk about TV because usually I bring up Doctor Who.
Usually you do.
It's not Doctor Who.
But you're all caught up, so
I am.
You can't even say I'm watching Doctor Who.
Game of Thrones.
Oh, right.
I just finished that.
Which several of us watch on the podcast, but I don't think we've ever talked about it.
And it is really good.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoy the hell out of it. My wife and I obtained a copy. I won't say how, but we blew right through it.
Because you're not a subscriber to the HBO.
I'm not a subscriber
to the HBO. So you don't know how Entourage will end.
I don't.
They will continue to be douchebags. Spoilers.
So I had picked up the first season, and we blew through it, which isn't easy for my wife and I to do, but it's one of those shows where we made time to watch it. And I was very happy that I knew as little as I did going into it.
Because
there are some twists and turns that will leave your jaw drop.
Yeah, definitely.
So that was a ton of fun. It's the most fun I've had watching, but blowing through a season in a long time.
Yeah.
It was quite good.
When I finished the first season, I wanted to then, like, read the next book because I want to know what happens next. But then I also don't want to. It's been established on this podcast that I don't read books, apparently. But I don't want to spoil, like, watching the show next season. So I have to wait. I have to wait a year to find out what happens. And I love the last shot so much. It got me so excited for what's coming. But I don't want to know, so I just have to wait a year.
This might be a horrible conversation to have on the podcast. But
all right, good. That's what this podcast is about. Horrible conversation.
But the last shot of the finale, and I won't say what it was. Did you sort of enjoy that cliffhanger more than the last shot of the second to last episode? I don't know if enjoy is the right word.
Definitely. I mean, HBO is sort of, I don't know if they're known for this, but a lot of their shows, particularly the really good ones, the second to last episode is always the one where, like, shit goes crazy.
Yes.
And it, like, that's where Sopranos was like that. The Wire was like that. And then the season finale is always sort of a come down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly how Game of Thrones operated. So I think if,
yes,
I think if it would have ended where the sort of penultimate episode ended, it would have felt cheap to me.
Okay.
I think it would have felt like a cheap cliffhanger.
Okay, I'm with you.
And I think it would have left too many people asking a specific question for far too long.
Yes, I totally agree.
So I appreciate that they answered it right away.
Yes, yeah, I absolutely agree. I think it was the right choice, but holy shit.
Oh, yeah, super shocking. Yeah. No, I don't want, we shouldn't say too much, but I'm glad that you're enjoying the Game of Thrones.
Yes, and again, I'll save Tinkerbell for another podcast.
Okay, good. We should devote an hour to that.
But it's intense.
I saw, is it as racy as I've heard?
Tinkerbell?
Yeah.
She's,
like, it's like a hard R, right? That's what I heard.
It is.
That
I was
Disney's kind of going a different way.
I was about to answer that, seriously.
Oh, please don't.
When I saw Peter Pan, I have a little girl, so I'm discovering all these Disney movies again. And when she started watching Peter Pan, I was honestly taken aback by how sort of sexual Tinkerbell is.
Really?
Yes.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
There's a scene very early on where she's standing on a mirror and she's admiring her herself. Like, she's touching her hips as she looks herself in the mirror, and it's
hot. Hot. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
I saw the new Conan movie.
Oh.
I saw both of this weekend's big releases because, you know, it's 1985, so all you had to choose from this weekend was Conan and Fright Night. So I saw the new Conan, didn't like it at all.
Okay.
I'm a fan of the original John Milius movie.
Me too.
I even kind of like Conan the Destroyer. I recognize that it's terrible, but like, I grew up watching that movie, so I dig it. This movie felt just, the first 10 or 15 minutes are pretty good. Like, it opens with Ron Perlman as Conan's dad on the battlefield with his wife. She's like mortally wounded, but pregnant. So he stabs her in the stomach. The shot is from inside the womb of the Conan, like, baby, okay, unborn. A sword comes towards the camera into the womb, and then he's cut out of the mom.
Okay.
Because she says, "Before I die, I want to see my son." So Ron Perlman cuts the baby out.
Right.
And then he says, "Name your son." And she says, "Conan." And he holds him up and goes, "Conan!" And that's how the movie starts. I'm like, this could be very entertaining. That's the best stuff in the movie.
Oh, that's too bad. Because
it's completely downhill from there.
No more womb cam?
No. I felt like a lot of the movie should have been from the point of view of the womb, whether there's a baby in there or not. I just thought it was mostly terrible. Marcus Nispel is a bad director, who makes hacky stuff. I kind of like Jason Momoa cause I'm a Stargate Atlantis fan and he's awesome on Game of Thrones. He's fine, but like, he's a bad actor.
Okay.
On Game of Thrones, he's pretty good. Cause like, he's not speaking English.
He's not asked to do.
And he's like, just super intimidating.
That's right. Exactly.
Right. And Conan, he's real good, like, with the physical stuff, but when he has to talk, man, it's rough.
Okay.
Stephen Lang is an embarrassment as the villain. Rose McGowan is, you know, being Rose McGowan. So much of the movie, to me, felt small, if that makes sense. Like, at times I was like, is this made for the Sci-Fi Channel? Like, it just was not good, and that was disappointing. Because, again, my standards were relatively low, you know? I just wanted sword fighting and violence, and, I mean, the movie had those things, but it was just so aggressively stupid.
Did you see it in 2D or 3D?
2D.
Okay.
And then I saw Fright Night as well.
Yes.
And I could probably do an entire show on what's wrong with Fright Night.
Oh, that's too bad.
I did not like it at all.
Okay.
And I find people are really split. Like, there are definitely people who feel the same way I do and don't like it at all. But there's a lot of people who are saying it's pretty good,
mm-hmm,
including people that I like and or respect. I don't understand that opinion. I'm on the record on this show as being a huge fan of the original. And this, yeah, and this, I feel like the remake only serves to point out how good the original is. Because, again, I ran into that, you know, last year you and I did a podcast on Rob Zombie's Halloween, and we had this debate back and forth about how can you divorce yourself from your affection for the original,
right,
in watching the remake. And I usually don't have that problem. I was really having that problem with Fright Night.
Okay.
With Halloween, I didn't have as much of a problem because it takes such a crazy,
it
goes a different way,
right,
so it's a different movie.
Right.
Dawn of the Dead, same thing. Well, right, and then it's a shot for shot.
Right.
Dawn of the Dead, same thing. So it's like, you kind of forget about the original. This movie reminded me, the remake it reminded me most of was the Nightmare on Elm Street remake.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, so they just borrow a bunch of the exact beats from the original, but they have no idea what to do with them, like, how to put them in any context that makes any sense. So it just keeps reminding you of this better movie, but then being bad throughout. the fact that, again, I could do a whole podcast on this, so I don't want to talk about it for too long, but Evil Ed, played by Christopher Mintz-Plasse,
yes,
is the one who, in the first 15 minutes, believes that Jerry Dandridge is a vampire and has to convince Charlie Brewster that he's a vampire. That one choice, I think, hobbles so much of the movie, because here's Charlie Brewster not believing in vampires, you know, and he has to be convinced. And
yes,
that takes away, again, everything that works about the original.
Right.
The fact that he goes to Peter Vincent makes no sense. Peter Vincent's role in the movie makes no sense. And we talked about that just based on the trailer, or the write-up. Like, oh, he's a Chris Angel magician in Vegas. They try and give him some backstory. It's horrible. It's your boy David Tennant. And he's fine, but, like, he's basically just playing this Russell Brand, Jack Sparrow dick. He has this Latina assistant slash girlfriend. They just, like, give each other the middle finger and insult each other all the time. I guess it's supposed to be funny that they bicker and they're awful.
What I'd read was that he – yeah, David Tennant's fine. It's the character itself that is a complete waste. There's no – again, this is just – I haven't seen it. There's no – you don't under – there's no connection between he
right.
and – Charlie.
Right. Gone is the dynamic between Charlie and his girlfriend and Evil Ed, that the three of them were sort of a unit.
Yeah.
And that they were, like, not nerds, but, like, they were just kind of normal kids whatever. Because now his girlfriend, Amy, is, like, this super hot chick and super popular. And Evil Ed was, like, his loser friend from when he was a kid. And now he's trying to be popular. Like, so it's, like, Can't Buy Me Love, sort of, where he's, like, right. What I don't understand why that's better. And what I figured out was, because when we got to the moment in the movie, I figured out why they had to refigure that entire all of those relationships and the entire character of Charlie Brewster, I think, was refigured because no one could figure out how to make the line, "You're so cool, Brewster," make sense. I'm serious. So Christopher Mintz-Plasse says it in the first 10 or 15 minutes of the movie. All of his stuff is taken care of in the first 15 minutes. If you've seen Fright Night, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
All of it's taken care of right away.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And so when he says it, it's this real sarcastic, like, "Oh yeah, you're so cool, Brewster." Like, and it's like, oh, that's why they did this, because they couldn't figure out how to make that work. But they figured, well, that line has to be in the movie.
Oh, that's amazing.
Colin Farrell is getting all this crazy praise.
Like, yeah, that was my
He's
expression.
The one good thing in the movie. I disagree, and I don't have a problem with Colin Farrell. But to me, he just, like, sort of squints and struts and is exactly what, like, if you told sort of a new actor, like, play a mean vampire, like, this is exactly what he would do. Okay. You know what I mean? And again, not that Chris Sarandon was, like, super subtle, but, like, he was just so awesome. And, like, you kind of liked him and he was charming.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whole Okay. I got to get off Fright Night. But, like, the whole reason that Jerry Dandridge wants to kill Charlie Brewster is because Charlie Brewster is trying to out him as a vampire.
Yes.
And could reveal his identity.
Right.
Jerry Dandridge in the remake has no problem with anyone knowing he's a vampire. He's killing everyone in Vegas. He has no pro- he tells everyone almost right off the bat that he's a vampire. So why would he want to specifically kill Charlie? There's no real reason other than, like,
they never establish a reason?
I mean, they do, because, like, he wants to kill everyone.
Ah.
But, like, that's it, okay. Pretty much. It's not because, like, he's trying to protect his identity.
Right.
Charlie's mom in the original was, like, a nurse that worked nights.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is great, because that means he's alone in the house every night when the vampire can get him. Not in the new one. She's a realtor, and she's in on the mission. Like, every choice they make is bad. I saw it in 2D, not 3D. And there's a lot of the special effects I thought were really bad, largely CGI, like blood splatters, horrible, like, fake vampire effects done in CGI. And then every once in a while there'd be 3D, you know, a hand reaching out towards the camera or blood spraying out or whatever. The most distracting is, like, near the end of the movie in the club scene that you and I talked about and got yelled at for. Because we said, I don't know if it needs to be in there. No, we're wrong. Women want to have sex with Chris Sarandon. We're sorry. So the club scene shows up in the last, like, 15 minutes of the movie.
Okay.
And, like, randomly, they cut to, like, a DJ who's like, "Hey, everybody, t-shirt gun," and he shoots a t-shirt towards the camera for 3D, and it's like, come on, we're supposed to be taking this seriously, right? Like, this isn't Piranha 3D, where it's funny, and that's part of the joke.
Right.
Like, we're supposed to, I know it's, like, it's fun, and it's funny, but, like, we're supposed to basically take it seriously. T-shirt gun! What? Like Fright Night.
Oh, no, I want to see it Fright Night.
I mean, I would wait until DVD, honestly. Right. There's no reason to go see it, because it will only upset you. But it is a reminder that the original is really, really great. I really love it, and I wish they would put it out on Blu-ray.
I agree. A lot of the praise I heard, everyone just seems to say it's fun. The people who liked it, that's the word I've read most
of. No, that's definitely a word I would use to describe the original.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the problem here is, the tone is fairly light, which is good, but, I couldn't have fun because I thought the screenplay was so bad.
Right.
The performances are okay. Anton Yelchin is okay as Charlie Brewster. He's mm-hmm. fine, but the character doesn't make any sense anymore. They had no idea what made the original special.
And again, I haven't seen the new one, but what bums me out is what they did with Peter Vincent. Because just being a movie nerd and a horror nerd, I loved his character in the original one.
He had an arc that made sense.
Absolutely.
Roddy McDowall was great. And again, we talked about this last October when we were talking about this remake. You can't do Peter Vincent the same way anymore.
You can, and I understand that.
But they did not come up with a satisfying alternative at all. Because even him being a magician never plays into the plot, never, except that Charlie Brewster goes to find him, and he's practicing his magic act.
Okay.
But again, he doesn't even know who Peter Vincent is. He has to Google his name and seek him out. And again, the charm of the original is Charlie Brewster is convinced that Peter Vincent is the only guy who will believe him because he's this huge fan and kind of takes this stuff seriously.
Right.
It's all gone.
Sounds like a great choice.
Yeah, so everybody go see Fright Night. Let's talk about Star Trek, everyone.
Please.
Okay, here is the deal, everyone. So if you are a Star Trek fan, I will apologize right now. I have never been less than forthcoming with the fact that up until I saw the J.J. Abrams Star Trek in 2009, which is the movie we're talking about, I was not a very big Star Trek fan. I had seen several of the movies, I'd watched the show a couple times, I never disliked it, but it was never part of my world. And so I know a lot of people are going to be put off by the fact that, the movie was my gateway into Star Trek. And I apologize if that upsets you, if you're like, you're a poser, I've liked it forever. Congratulations, you like it more than me.
I realize you don't want to go off in this conversation, but I don't, there probably would be people who react that
for
way,
sure
and
there
I
would
don't.
Be.
Understand that at all.
I don't either, but that's a whole different conversation because my feeling is whatever gets you into it, it's worth getting into. So what difference does it make? So I saw Star Trek in 2009 and flipped out and kept telling my wife that I only wanted to watch Star Trek for the rest of my life. And now I am I'm a huge Star Trek nerd, and I've been going through the show episode by episode and writing them up at TV Verdict, and I'm almost through the original series, and I can't wait to get into the Next Generation. I've been listening to a band that plays songs about Star Trek. I've actually been reading Star Trek novels. I'm way deep in this shit.
You are deeper than I realized.
I love it. So,
were you, because I find, we'll go into this more, but I find the J.J. Abrams Star Trek to be very, very different from the series in that Star Trek, I guess I'm thinking specifically Next Generation, because that's, and we can go into my history with Star Trek, I guess. But it's a very talky and very...
The show.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. So did you find, obviously not because you've immersed yourself in it, but did you find that, I think I just find it fascinating that you fell so in love with the 2009 version that you, obviously weren't affected by the completely different pace from the shows and.
No, not at all. And here's why. And it's going to be hard to talk just about the movie and not about Star Trek in general. No, it's not your fault, but because obviously the tendency is to keep talking about just Star Trek, the giant umbrella of Star Trek. What I really like about the movie and what I've always liked about the show, and there are I think people are into Star Trek for very different reasons. Some people just like the science of it. Some people like just sort of the different stories, the politics of it, the futuristic element, whatever. A lot of people are just into the tech. What I love about the show is the characters.
That would be me as well.
And that, I think, is what the movie really gets right. Because you're absolutely right. In terms of its story and its tone and what it's trying to do, the movie, the 2009 movie, actually isn't, like, good Star Trek.
No.
Because it's basically just an action movie, a big summer fun event movie. But I think what it really gets right is all of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think, carried me over. That, maybe that's what I fell in love with. I don't know. Okay. And then that's what carried me over to the show, where obviously you get to explore that a lot more, and that's what keeps me going. But
right.
Even rewatching this movie for the podcast, that was my thought again, was how they really sort of got a lot of the characters right. I think they fleshed out certain characters even more than the show ever did, at the expense of some others, particularly... There's a lot of Uhura and not a lot of McCoy, I thought, mm-hmm. in the movie.
Yeah.
Which was disappointing, because that's that the relationship between Kirk and Spock and McCoy is my favorite thing about the show.
Okay.
And it's not really present in the movie, and maybe that's because it's sort of this prequel. Which, remind me, we have to get back to this prequel nonsense.
Okay.
But I thought the movie really got the characters right, even if it didn't necessarily get sort of the Star Trek-ness right.
I completely agree, and that really dawned on me as well this last time that I watched it, because, you know, J.J. Abrams, I believe, said he wasn't the biggest Star Trek fan heading into this, and I thought that that's probably perfect, because he made a movie, in some ways, in that he made a movie that I think appealed to, it didn't alienate people who were unaware of Star Trek or just, you know, was turned off by the word Star Trek being together. Like, he made a movie that non-Trekkies and non-sci-fi fans can latch onto. And that's what I always took away from at least my first viewing of it. That it did not feel like a Star Trek movie, but that it was okay. That it was completely fun. It was a fun action movie. And I thought maybe I put my own Star Trek knowledge into it. Does that make any sense? Like, I enjoyed it as a Star Trek movie. I enjoyed the characters because I had already come into it understanding and knowing a lot of the characters, not right. giving the credit to the movie I had just seen for that. However, upon viewing it this time, I realized, like, no, not at all, that he actually did get the characters right in my mind and like you said, fleshed them out. And does that make any sense?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know, the movie, obviously, I think was kind of up against a wall because – its greatest success, I think, is to make Star Trek relevant again or viable again, like to where people want to see a sequel to this. And like you said, I think a lot of people would have been put off by the idea of a Star Trek movie. And so they were smart in opening it up and making it more appealing.
You made it cool.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's fun. And it's like in an increasingly... on the last podcast, Mark Ahn was on, and he talked about this term, creeping Nolanism, where everything is becoming dark and gritty. Yeah. And Star Trek, the J.J. Abrams Star Trek, is like almost the polar opposite of that. It's very easy to see where somebody else might have gone that direction and made it more like Battlestar Galactica. Like with that show's popularity, it's like, oh, that's what people want to do. So let's make it more like that. But they kind of went the other way. It's bright and it's colorful and it has tons of energy. Again, I do not want to praise the 2009 Star Trek nonstop for the next half hour or so, because it's a movie with a bunch of problems. Like, it is by no means a perfect movie. But it is a lot of fun and it serves a very important role in my own life, you know, and I watch it and I could watch it 50 times. Like, I think it's super entertaining, even though there are scenes that make me cringe still. And maybe we should get into that later.
I'm curious.
It's, you know, the movie just moves in like these kind of very specific set pieces. And a lot of them I think really work, but then there's other ones that don't. And a lot of the humor I don't particularly like. And I think he interjects humor in moments where he doesn't need it. Sometimes it's really subtle and good. It's just a funny thing that, like, Chris Pine will do as Kirk. But then other times, I mean, the scene where they have to get Kirk onto the shuttle, and so he ejects him and makes him sick and his hands swell up. I will hate that scene the rest of my life, the hand swelling up.
See, that's funny because I was reminded watching it again that at least in my theater, that scene played so well.
I think it does, but I hate it. You know, I think it's just this broad comic bullshit for no reason. And I was going to say, I mean, it feels like something out of Transformers, you know, and there's a reason for that, because this remake was written by Robert Orci and Alex Kurtzman, who wrote the Transformers movies, and they have so much in common, and they wrote Cowboys and Aliens too. And it's like, I think I talked about it on the Cowboys and Aliens podcast that, like, they are not great screenwriters by any means. They can write, like, from scene to scene, but they have a problem with, like, sort of the connective tissue. Mm-hmm. So the set pieces work, but, I mean, there are these shortcuts taken in this movie and coincidences that are completely implausible. And, again, I end up just kind of going with it because I like the movie. Yeah, but sure. If I didn't, I would really have a problem with, like, we got to dump Kirk on this planet.
And that's the first thing popped
in. And he runs into Spock. I mean, that is just a shortcut to an exposition dump that is unforgivable. There's another scene, too, when Kirk and Scotty first beam back onto the Enterprise. And I like Simon Pegg, and I like him as Scotty, but again, he's sort of this comic relief character that I think they push a little too hard. When they beam back onto the Enterprise, Scotty gets beamed into the water pipes. What the hell is the purpose of that?
Of the water pipes or that scene?
That scene. It's just like, we need this stupid action beat. Yes, we need a laugh, exactly, whatever. What it, yeah, it's stuff like that that pisses me off. That I think the movie is directed with like a ton of confidence, and J.J. Abrams had really only made Mission Impossible 3 before this, and I think a lot of people wrote that off as like, oh, it feels like an episode of Alias, and I think this was a movie where he showed like, no, I could do a big budget Hollywood movie, and I can do it well, because he does make really entertaining movies. But he has this idea that there has to be an action beat, you know, every 7 minutes or something, and maybe that comes from TV. I don't know, in between the commercials. I don't know, because there are a few scenes when Kirk gets chased by the big CGI snow monster. Yeah. Like, doesn't need to be there at all.
No,
those kinds of things piss me off.
To go, I'm all over the place, but I going into this movie, I would not classify myself as a Trekkie. I think that's an insult to real Trekkies, but I'm always been a fan of the series. I watched a lot of Next Gen.
You call it Next Gen, so I think that gives you some legitimacy there.
A lot of TNG.
Yeah, you don't even say Generation. You're like, they know what I'm talking about.
I watched a bunch of episodes of the original series.
DS9.
Right.
V'ger.
TOS.
E-Press.
So I was a fan, but not a crazy fanboy. But I was very curious and a little nervous about them rebooting Star Trek. Not that I thought it was a bad idea, but I thought if they don't get the casting right, it's at least maybe for me and other fans of Star Trek, like that, it's going to be really difficult to have me latch onto it, because I mean, Leonard Nimoy is Spock and William Shatner is Kirk, and they're iconic. And I think it's, you know, the casting needed to be just right. And I didn't know Chris Pine before this movie.
I knew him from a couple of things. I saw a Lindsay Lohan movie that he was in, and he was one of the killers in Smokin' Aces. Like, I knew who he was, but I was not that familiar.
Smokin' Aces.
Yeah.
Okay, but I feel specifically if that – well, and of course he's Kirk, so that this makes sense. But if he didn't work, the movie doesn't work. And oh my God, does he work.
Yeah,
he is wonderful. Yeah. He is just – that dude oozes just charisma.
Yeah.
And I want to follow him in every scene. Like, I love him. That is just wonderful. Wonderful casting, and I can't say enough about
it. No, and I totally agree, and he does it without doing a Shatner impression.
Yes, right.
He gets the spirit of the character.
Absolutely.
Without resorting to an impression, because I think Zachary Quinto is fine as Spock, but he's kind of doing a Spock impression.
He is, but if this makes sense, I'd almost be disappointed if he played a Spock in a different way.
Yeah, he's definitely locked in a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree.
Carl Urban's kind of doing a DeForest Kelly impression, you know. Chris Pine, I think, is the only one who really sort of made the part his own.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other people are all fine. I like John Cho. I like Anton Yelchin in the part, and he gets a few laughs and whatever, but like those characters aren't particularly developed. I mean,
No.
And never have been all that much. I mean, Chekhov's supposed to be young and have a thick accent. Sulu has never really been a particularly well-developed character. Right. So he's fine, and I like the little nods, like the fencing and all that. Yeah, you know, no, like that, all that stuff's cool. Yeah, Chris Pine is super.
He's wonderful.
He's great.
He is.
And he makes me laugh every time you get to the end of the movie. And spoilers for Star Trek, we apologize, but you probably should have seen it. And you also have to know that, like, the crew is going to survive to the end of the movie because this is like a relaunch and sort of a prequel. So everybody lives. And when they get to the end of the movie and you finally have the whole crew together on the bridge, I just love that scene because I get so excited. But he walks onto the bridge and he pauses and he does this bones like that. And that's the one moment where there's Shatner in his performance. And I laugh every single time because it's so great. Gosh, I don't even. Where else do we go? I think, while I don't think that the script is particularly great, I think they were very clever in the way that they sort of broke it off
and like rebooted the
absolutely. While still acknowledging that like no, all the original stuff still had, you know, it's cheap because it's this alternate universe basically. Yeah. But I think it's clever. They can go any direction they want now, exactly. and all of the stuff that came before still happened. You know, they're mm-hmm. still acknowledging that, like, yes, Kirk did get shot in the Nexus by Malcolm McDowell. That did happen. He's dead. like all the bad things that but everything that came before is still there. But this is just sort of an alternate universe. And this is what I was going to say about prequels. I have gone on and on. I don't know if this movie about my distaste in general for prequels, because all they can do is get us back to the place where we know we're going to end up. Mm-hmm. And this more than most, I thought kind of works, and maybe it's because it's different enough. It's not just filling in events that we already knew happened.
Right.
Because it changes the characters just enough, to be something different. And again, all it needs to do is put these people together on an adventure and have them end up together at the end for more adventures. There wasn't a bunch of this, like, I liked X-Men First Class, but I had a bunch of problems with all the stupid nods to, like, next I'm going to be losing my hair, and he's got to be in a wheelchair, and Magneto has to be on this side, and Xavier has to be on this side by the end. It exists only to, like, put these pieces on the chessboard. And we knew that that's where the pieces were already going into the movie. So I have issues with that, but I felt like Star Trek was able to avoid a lot of those traps.
Absolutely. I thought, I really dug the energy of mm-hmm. the movie. Like, it was just, I mean, camera's always moving.
Yeah. And that's something that people have a problem with.
No.
As well as the lens flares. Right.
Which, by the way, my wife has seen this movie a number of times, and she was watching it with me the other day. We're about an hour in, and I made some comment about the lens flares, and she apparently never noticed them and could have killed me because now that's all she saw.
Yeah. I mean, I'm able to ignore them.
Oh, I can't too. They don't bother me.
Yeah. I mean, some of it I even like. I just like the way that the movie looks. I like the way it's shot. But yeah, if it bothers you, it's really going to bother you.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Can't really make apologies for it.
Right. But
what do you think about Eric Bana as the villain?
he's fine. He's somehow a little forgettable to me.
Yeah.
When I distance myself from the movie at all, he's the last person I think of.
Yeah.
He's a little over the top. I think he's having fun with it. He's fine.
Yeah.
I don't mind him, but he's not, he doesn't stick. He doesn't stick with me at all.
Right. He's kind of generic. And that's almost fine. And I don't know if that's by design or whatever, because the focus of the movie needs to be, it doesn't matter what the mission is. The focus needs to be on getting these people
absolutely
together as a crew.
Right.
And if the villain is so big or so memorable, does he pull focus from that? Maybe.
Right.
They obviously kind of borrowed a page from Wrath of Khan, just in terms of he's this guy who just wants revenge, basically. Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting, though, that they just made him, like, this minor. Like, he's just... he wasn't, and he's not really a villain until these things happen to Romulus or whatever, and now he is hell-bent on revenge, but he's basically just a regular blue-collar guy.
Right.
But yeah, he doesn't, he's not a great villain in the way that, like...
Khan?
Or... Right, I mean, Khan obviously is the best villain in any Star Trek movie, and that remains the best movie, but so much of that movie obviously depends on the back and forth between Kirk and Khan, and I think that would have been wrong for this movie. So I think he's okay, but he's kind of generic, you know?
Were the face tattoos unique to this movie?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, because I don't remember ever seeing Romulus.
Yeah, and I mean, in the early days, they just looked like Vulcans honestly. Right, yeah. And they keep changing over the years. And there's a question, too, of... Because of the whole sort of time travel element of the movie, the Romulans essentially disappear for 25 years and wait for Spock for 25 years. And it's like, well, what were they doing that whole time? Were they just parked and waiting? There's some stuff that was cut from the movie where they're taken prisoner by Klingons and actually, like, tortured. Really? Yeah. There's a shot early on, maybe one of the first shots of Eric Bana in the movie. It's just this close-up on his face for a long time.
Yeah.
That was taken out of context because that was actually a shot from one of the scenes where he's being tortured by the Klingons, but they stuck it in somewhere else and you would never know the difference. But
are there any of those deleted scenes on the DVD? Because I didn't.
There may be.
I'd like to see the Klingon makeup. Like,
yeah, see, I don't know if I don't remember seeing that on there, so maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. I know it from listening to the commentary track.
Okay.
Because I don't remember if those specific deleted scenes are on there.
Okay.
But. J.J. Abrams talks about that on the commentary. So, I mean, again, it doesn't solve the problem with the movie because you have to buy the DVD and listen to the commentary in order to know, like, they were actually held prisoner for a lot of that time and not just sitting waiting for 25 years, because that's, again, another sort of flaw in the story.
Right. Exactly.
But whatever. I thought it was interesting watching it this time around, actually. A lot of people had a problem with the fact that, like, Spock and Uhura are kind of dating.
Oh, I kind of, I like that.
I do, too, because it's something different. And again, it's a different version of Spock, and maybe it's because he's younger and not quite as in touch with both sides of his personality.
Right.
Because they set it up very early on that he's sort of, you know, caught between these two worlds. So he's more prone to maybe human emotion, or maybe it's because, you know, the story has changed and his planet is gone and he's a different Spock than the one we saw on the show. So he does sort of have these outbursts and he does get mad and he is in love with somebody. When Leonard Nimoy shows up to do the big exposition dump, I was watching his performance this time, and maybe it's because I'm so sort of entrenched in Star Trek right now. He's not playing Spock. Do you notice that? He's basically just playing Leonard Nimoy. There's nothing particularly Spockish about his delivery, his performance.
Okay.
And, you know, again, if you're going to be an apologist or talk, maybe it's like, well, he's older and he's changed or he's more in touch with his humanity, you know.
And that would be my instinct. Maybe I'm being an apologist.
Right. But then it's like, so the young Spock is in touch with his human side, and then so is the old Spock. It's that one in the middle that's like pure logic Vulcan. I don't know, but, like, he's not playing Spock at all. He's playing Leonard Nimoy.
See, I'm being an apologist, because, like, right away I'm like, well, he's older, and he's been through a lot.
And it never occurred to me. Like, you just accept it, because, like, well, there's Leonard Nimoy. He's Spock. He has the Spock ears on.
Exactly, like, and that's, I accepted it, too.
So we just say, well, he's Spock, and that's fine. But, again, when you watch, I was watching it this time, and there's such a difference between the way that Zachary Quinto plays the part and the way that Leonard Nimoy plays the part. And there's such a difference between the way Nimoy played the part on the show, that's in the movies, and the way he's playing it now. And maybe they just felt like, well, the movie can't really have, like, two Spocks, you know, so cool it off. I don't know. But he's absolutely just being Leonard Nimoy.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
If you would have told me that the new Star Trek, if you would have told me, let's say 2008, that the new Star Trek movie, within at about the 11-minute mark, my wife would cry.
I almost did as well.
Yeah, and then a minute later, Beastie Boys Sabotage is playing, and it is awesome.
Yeah.
I would think you're fucking crazy. This is going to be...
I love the way that whole opening scene is handled.
Oh, yeah.
It still moves me.
Yeah.
it grabs you right away into the story. And again, Chris Hemsworth,
there you go,
playing George Kirk, like, oh, super charismatic, yep, and goes on to be Thor and carries that movie the way that Chris Pine carries this.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a ton to like, I think, about the movie. And J.J. Abrams, yeah, swears that Sabotage is not in the movie as a reference to Shatner. I say Sabotage.
I didn't even think of that. I didn't put that.
I thought for sure that's why it was. Because why else do you have this song from, you know, 1994 or whatever in the new Star Trek movie? Like, it's the only recognizable sort of like pop song on the soundtrack. What the hell is it doing in the movie? And I think it works, like you said, but like, yeah, it feels out of place. And then I was like, oh, Sabotage. I say Sabotage.
So you're way smarter than I am.
He swears that that's not why it's there.
See, but you say, like, I understand anybody who says to them it feels out of place. But to me it feels out of place in that this is a song, like you said, from 1994.
You don't expect to hear a song that you recognize.
Right, exactly. I think it works. It still totally works.
I agree. And the way it's cut to the officer's boot, yeah, stomping down. I love all that stuff. Right. But it's jarring because you're like, well, I didn't expect to hear a song that I know,
right,
playing in Star Trek movie. A, because of Star Trek, and B, because isn't this the future?
Right.
Whatever. Like,
the Beastie Boys are timeless. That's what he's trying to say.
But you know what pissed me off watching it this time, too? Again, and I love that opening so much. You know, when little boy Kirk steals the car, and he gets a call from his stepdad who's like yelling at him, like, yeah, you stole my car, asshole. It made me mad because I was like, well, that means she remarried, and she remarried like kind of an asshole. And I was like, look what your husband did. How could you marry someone else after George Kirk destroys the Enterprise to save you? Whatever.
Maybe it's his uncle. Maybe it's his mother's brother.
What?
And well, maybe
doesn't he say it's your stepdad?
No, I don't.
I thought he did, okay, but maybe I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
No, maybe I'm wrong.
You're just trying to make me feel better. I think the movie gets a lot of those sort of iconic shots right. Also, when Kirk first pulls up to see the Enterprise, it's just awesome, like parked. When they first see it in space, like, mm-hmm, a lot of those moments, I think he really gets right.
He does. He's, some of the dialogue is a little cringeworthy, yeah, than they, you know, they got to have Bones say, you know, damn it, I'm a, right, doctor, not a,
right. And they have to have Scotty at the end say, I'm giving her all she's got, which actually works a little
better. It works much, much better. I had more problems with some of the stuff that came out of Bones' mouth.
Yeah.
Spock, are you out of your Vulcan mind?
Like, yeah, that, right, gives me, right. And he's underwritten as a character, and it's like, he's just kind of grouchy. That's all there is to the character. You know. And maybe in the sequel we'll see something different. I hope.
Will we see a sequel?
I think so. I mean, they keep pushing it back, and basically J.J. Abrams just keeps saying, well, the script's not there yet, which I want to say, great.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that is a good reason to delay, but at the same time, like, he pulled the trigger on this script, and this script wasn't great. You know, it's so much. The movie is carried completely by the performances and the direction.
Yeah,
because change either of those two things, and I think those glaring flaws in the script would be way more obvious.
Yep.
But yeah, they keep talking about doing a sequel, and again, like a lot of comic book movies or whatever that have to tell an origin story, a lot of times the sequels are better because all the pieces are finally in place.
Yep.
And it's interesting because, like with Star Trek, people want to see so many different things in the sequel. So everybody has different ideas about, like, well, they should do Khan for the sequel. Well, why? There's a great Khan movie already.
Right.
You got to do Klingons. Like, maybe they'll do Klingons. I don't know, but Klingons kind of have been done to death too. I don't necessarily want them to just, like, invent an enemy, but I would have no problem with that if they did, you know?
Right.
Rather than rehash something that we've already had.
And that's something I wouldn't lose sleep over, because they just proved you can make a kick-ass movie with Romulans.
Right. Kind of generic Romulans who are miners.
Right, exactly.
But have a huge, crazy ship.
Yeah, right, yeah. but yeah, I mean, to me, as long as, you know, J.J. Abrams is doing it and you're bringing that cast back, as long as, you know, the Channing Tatum isn't recast as Kirk.
Do you think that could happen? Let's hope so.
I hope. I pray.
As do I. Do you have... Where does this rank for you? Yeah, see, you know what's coming. With the Star Trek, just the movies.
I don't think I'm going to give an original answer. I think
okay,
Khan is probably the best.
Of course it is.
Then I would say this one.
Okay, interesting.
And then
I did not expect that.
First Contact.
Okay.
I love First Contact. I love First Contact, but I recognize that it's not a great movie, and I don't think it's as good a movie as Khan or this one.
Okay.
I think it's good, but I think it's
I need to see it again because I saw it the night it opened,
yeah,
and I really liked it, and I was not watching Next Generation. I just saw it because I was like I wanted to see something.
And before this movie, that's a movie I would point to as a Star Trek movie for non-Star Trek fans.
Yeah. Well, it was for me, yeah, because that totally worked for me. I dug that movie. I haven't seen it in a long time, so I don't know if it holds up the way that it does in my memory.
Probably not.
Yeah.
As well.
I know large parts of Wrath of Khan, like, from heart, by heart. So, yeah, that's definitely the best for me. And I don't know if I could place this second. I love it. It's super entertaining, but because I know how flawed it is, I don't know where I could put it. I really don't.
First Contact?
No, the 2009 one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I love it. It makes me very happy to watch it. And I think that's what pulled me into Star Trek more than anything. For some reason, I watched it, and I just was like, it made me so crazy happy to be seeing that movie. That I just wanted to chase that and keep watching Star Trek, assuming that it would always make me that happy. And it always does.
So, okay, but yet you're still unclear where you would rank it. Would you rank, do you think, obviously Khan's your favorite, correct?
Yeah, oh yeah.
So do you think you would rank other original series movies ahead of it? What next gen, aside from maybe First Contact, what
next
gen
movies would be? Oh yeah, no. And even in terms of original series, I mean, I like Search for Spock, but I think I like Search for Spock in relation to Khan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do.
Like, as its own movie, it doesn't really work. It's the middle piece of a chapter or a middle piece of a series. But I do really like that movie. You know, I've still never seen the original Star Trek The Motion Picture. And I've been holding off because I'm doing this series, and I knew eventually I would get to that. Once I get through all the original series, I'm going to do the animated series and then start with the movies.
Awesome.
And as soon as I realized I was doing that, I was like, well, I want to hold off and see it for the first time when I write about it. So that's the only one I've never seen, because I actually just watched Insurrection for the first time. That was the only other one I had never seen.
Oh, okay.
It was okay.
Yeah.
It was not the worst. I thought it was better than Nemesis.
Nemesis is not good.
Nemesis might be the worst.
Yeah, it might be.
Because I might even be able to find more to like in Final Frontier.
Okay.
Even though that one's pretty bad as well. What with all the row, 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 you're boating, and the gravity boots.
I would say...
And the Cybok.
Star Trek the movie is very, to me, very impressed with itself.
Yeah.
So it feels very slow.
Yeah.
At times. Long sweeping shots of the Enterprise.
Well, they on the commentary, and again, I listened to like the first half hour in preparation for this podcast. On the commentary to the J.J. Abrams one, they reference that. They say that the first time Robert Wise really shows the Enterprise, they said it's like a 10-minute sequence.
Yeah, it seems
right. And so they sort of wanted to pay tribute to that with the first shot of the Enterprise in the 2009 version. But yeah, they made mention of, I think they said it's like 10 minutes.
Yeah, it feels forever. It feels every bit 10 minutes. But yeah, no, I really, again, rewatching it for this podcast, I was reminded how much I really love the new Star Trek movie. I think I liked it more than I even remembered liking it. So,
it's like very rewatchable, and it's like, it's super entertaining. Like, I would never say it's a great movie in the way that we talk about, like, Raging Bull is a great movie, you know, or whatever. I said that for you, by the way. Raging Bull. That was Mike loves Martin Scorsese and boxing, everyone. And Kathy Moriarty. So, like, Raging Bull is a great movie. And I can't say that, like, Star Trek is a great movie. Although I do think Wrath of Khan is a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that movie works. I think that movie exceeds, whatever. It works beyond just as a Star Trek movie.
Do you have a favorite science fiction movie?
Blade Runner.
Yeah, okay.
I think.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Wrath of Khan would be in there.
Yeah.
It would be in the top five. I love it. Just hearing like the opening score, I could actually probably start crying. I love it. So I would never say that this new Star Trek is a great movie, but it's such an entertaining movie. And again,
so fucking watchable. Like, yeah. Like you said earlier, I can go home right now and put it on. And
this is what I'm saying. I literally, the night we saw it, I said, I don't want to watch anything else ever again. I just want to watch Star Trek for the rest of my life. And I would be fine with that. It's just, you know, we've been through another kind of shitty summer at the movies. Last summer was kind of a shitty, I mean, they're all kind of just shitty because the movies are big and expensive and we're supposed to see them and they're always just empty and disappointing. And this movie, if nothing else, wants so badly to entertain you, but without insulting you.
Like Transformers.
Right.
Right.
Which isn't really even interested in entertaining you. It's interested in, like, pummeling you into submission.
Yeah, I guess.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Star Trek at least wants you to be engaged with it.
Right.
Something like Transformers does not. And it is, again, rare to see a movie that is just... And that's something else that they got right, I think, from the show. While they didn't necessarily get the spirit of the show in terms of, like... Let's interact with an alien civilization. Let's learn something from one another. You know, sort of the more cerebral side of Star Trek. It just turned Star Trek into an action movie. But they did get sort of the overall optimism of the show.
Yeah.
Right. Because it is just like an upbeat movie. And that even is kind of rare for a summer movie.
It is.
I think.
Nowadays. It's like a perfect summer movie.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, I like it a lot, and like I said, it has turned me into such a huge Star Trek nerd.
That's awesome. But again,
Is it awesome? Because, again, my wife is going to divorce me. She did sign on for this.
It is true.
I'm checking out Star Trek books. I'm reading Leonard Nimoy's autobiography.
I didn't know it ran this deep.
It's bad. It's bad. We're surrounded now by Star Trek action figures.
It's true.
In the F This Movie studio. And even those are new. I mean, I can't say, like, those have been here forever. But they're in here now. I'm turning this office into just a den of Star Trek worship.
And if you haven't watched Star Trek and this podcast got you interested, I don't know how it would.
But yeah, please.
If it got you at all interested.
This podcast won't even get people interested in our podcast.
Netflix Instant right now has the original series in its entirety, Next Generation, Voyager, and Enterprise.
And the movie. The 2009 movie. None of the original series movies.
Right.
But yeah, if you haven't seen this and you've listened like 57 minutes in, and you're like, I guess I should give it a look, it is on Netflix Instant.
Yes.
As are all of the shows, but not Deep Space Nine.
Not Deep Space Nine. But maybe by the time, if you start from the beginning, which Patrick and I would have to do.
Absolutely.
Maybe by the time you get through Next Gen, Deep Space Nine will pop up.
And I'll tell you what, again, I'm still working my way through the original series because I've taken these long breaks just for other stuff, you know, other stuff comes up. And I try and write about every episode for this thing, and I find it hard to be, like, this is how I know that I'm just being too much of a nerd. Like, I find it hard to be critical of almost any episode because, like, I don't care. I am happy watching Star Trek, so even if this is a shitty episode... I don't care because I'm hanging out with these people that I love now. And
that's how you know you're a fan. You just want to be in their world.
Right? I know, but you got to be like, even as a fan, you should be able to discern good from bad.
Oh, no. Right? Yes, like, I agree. But it doesn't, you know, should discourage you.
Like, you don't watch, you love Scorsese, right? You don't watch Casino and think like, this is really good. Like, you're able to say
that it's really, really good.
That it's a 3-hour montage.
Such an ass.
I am. Apparently that whole movie is about cocaine, by the way. Did I tell you this?
Probably.
Thank you, F This Movie listener. Somebody emailed and said, like, you didn't get it. That movie's all about cocaine, and so it's cut to feel like a cocaine binge. Oh, I'm like, at what point did we agree that this movie's all about cocaine? When was that statement made at all?
Patrick, it's right there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here's the thing. I don't get subtext at all, which is why I love the 2009 Star Trek, bringing it back, because it's a movie without any subtext whatsoever. It really is just like, what you see is what you get.
Absolutely.
And I'm okay with that.
I was going to say, that's fine sometimes.
Yeah, not all the time. And I would hope that, again, the sequel would explore maybe some deeper themes, but at the same time, if they don't, how am I going to be super upset if it's as good as this one, if it's right. as fun to watch and as well put together as this one? Maybe I won't even care. I don't know.
It's amazing. If you would have told 15-year-old Mike that right now the biggest movies in the world are Star Trek and Batman.
Yeah, right.
Captain America.
Right.
I'd be so fucking excited.
I know, and yet here we are, right? And we're so jaded by it.
Exactly. We're just like, these movies suck.
I want real movies again.
Right.
How messed up is that?
It's very messed up.
Are we just spoiled?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or is that really what it is? Or is it just they're not getting these things right?
Well, it's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
But I feel like... I feel like we're spoiled because I would have, you know, if you put out, I don't know, I was going to say Green Lantern, I probably still wouldn't like it. But, I mean, I might have liked it more if Green Lantern was sort of on its...
I think, you know, I would have, yeah, if it came out in, like, 95. Right. And I was like, this is a superhero movie? Awesome.
Right, exactly.
It's not good, but, like, that's how I felt about the original Batman. Right, listen, well, folks, the original Batman, not that great. But, like, I didn't care because, yeah, oh, my absolutely. God, they made a movie out of Batman.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that has a lot to do with it, but when Green Lantern's, you know, released the same summer as Captain America and X-Men First Class, and...
It's too much. I don't want it. And again, I should be super excited about next summer, and I'm just like...
See, I am still... Out. I'm still super excited about next summer just because of the properties. Because it's Batman and the Avengers and Superman and...
Yeah, although Superman got pushed to December.
Yes, well, that's true.
But Spider-Man.
Yeah, and Spider-Man. Emo Spider-Man.
Yeah, right? Come on. But back to Star Trek.
Yeah, sorry.
If they could just make a Star Trek movie every year, I would be okay with that.
Every week you'd be okay with that.
I would be okay with that. Yeah, I'm excited to get into Next Generation because I've only seen sort of a handful of shows, and that was a long time ago. I've seen all the Next Generation movies. I like the people. I mean... Enough. I like Picard, you know. I don't love everybody on the crew, but...
I think you'll like Riker.
Yeah.
Like, he grows on you. He's a good number one.
I can't deal with him without a beard, though, and he doesn't have a beard in the beginning, right?
The first season, he does not have a beard.
See, that's a problem for me.
And the first season...
Because he shaves that thing off in Insurrection, too, and I'm like, stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it. Bring it back.
I'm with you. And I'm not... so well versed in Next Generation that I could confirm this, but what I had always read was the first season isn't great. So when you get into bearded Riker, you know you're
okay. Then I'm on easy street.
Exactly. All
right, so. Good. Bearded Riker. The original. Okay, we gotta stop.
Which is the name of our Star Trek band, by the way.
Bearded Riker. The band, by the way, that I've been listening to, they write songs about Star Trek. They're called 5 Year Mission. Yep. Check them out. 5YearMission.net. They have a song for every episode of the original series.
So now, will you continue to laugh at?
Well, I don't laugh. I don't laugh at anyone.
Ari Lehman, who writes songs about Jason.
Yeah, of course I will.
Okay, and not just because he writes songs only about Jason in Friday the 13th, but because he's Ari Lehman and.
Yeah, both.
Okay.
Both. Right. It's not like the guys in Star Trek are just writing songs about being in Star Trek. This is a different band, and the songs are actually good.
All right, okay.
If the first Jason songs were great, there's no way. There's the it's so different.
It is. You're right.
It's so different.
I'm crazy.
And again, I shouldn't even be listening to this music, and there's nothing against the band. They're a good band. I like the songs, but, like, I should probably be listening to other music, but I'm just like, no, see, this kills two birds. I could be listening to music... But it's still Star Trek related. I'm so messed up.
I'm going to get really nerdy for a second. If I had a TARDIS and I can go back in time, let's say a year ago, maybe a year and a half, two years. And I grabbed you and said, you will love Avatar and listen to a band that writes about Star Trek music. You would think I'm crazy.
I would absolutely think you were crazy. I would think you were nuts. But here it is, and that's who I am.
Yep.
By the way, nice TARDIS, bro. Guess we'll have to do a Doctor Who podcast when they make that movie. Who's going to play Doctor Who? Go.
Matt Smith.
In the movie?
Well, there's rumors that there was not going to be a season at all next year, yeah. And now they're saying there will be, that it'll be later in the year. But okay. One of the rumors is that they're pushing it later in the year because they may do a movie.
A theatrical movie.
Correct.
With Matt Smith?
Well, why wouldn't it be Matt?
It's going to be like Hugh Jackman or something. Oh, my Just God. Watch.
No.
Just watch. It's going to be fucking...
No.
Channing Tatum as Doctor Who.
Oh, that's not even funny.
Give me a line from Doctor Who. I'll say it as Channing Tatum.
Oh, God. You could trust me. I'm the doctor.
Okay. You could trust me. I'm the doctor. How's that? Is that good? One, please.
Oh, that's horrible. No, I honestly think it would be, they would keep the same doctor.
All right.
I really do.
All right. I don't know what studio is going to bankroll that.
I understand that. I understand the logic that Matt Smith isn't going to get an American audience in there, right. But
hopefully they will. Listen, they did it for Star Trek, right? But that was years after the show was already canceled.
I'll save it for the Doctor Who podcast, but they tried making a Doctor Who movie for America podcast.
Yeah.
Or for American audiences on a made-for-TV movie where Eric Roberts played a...
I think I'm familiar with this, yeah.
A villain. I think it was like co-produced by the BBC, and I don't know who did it in the United States, but the hope was that they would air it on TV in the United States and England. The hope was that it would be huge in the United States, and then they would spin that off into... a series that they would air here, and it didn't do too well.
Do you blame Eric Roberts?
No.
Should he be ever blame Eric Roberts? The next Doctor?
No, it's going to be Matt Smith.
All right.
You heard it here at This Movie Listeners. Matt Smith, if they do a theatrical movie, you know, within the near future, Matt Smith will be the Doctor.
I'm going Tom Baker. Is he still alive?
I think he is still alive.
All right. Dig him up.
Whovians go crazy. Okay, remember.
Whovians?
That's what Doctor Who fans are called.
For real?
Whovians.
I feel cool to be a Trekkie.
And if you...
Whovians sound like fucking only, Dr. Seuss characters.
You can only have a certain number... You can only have a certain number of Doctors, and if they were to recast the Doctor...
Yeah.
I think
you can only have a certain number of Doctors?
Yeah, well, I
What's
think...
What's the limit?
I think 12... Which they're going to have to figure something out, because they're on the 11th.
More than 12?
Oh. No, they're on the 11th.
Okay.
But if they were to recast...
Technically, he would be the 12th.
He would be the 12th. And then, what do you do with...
Does this count the guy from the American TV movie?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
He's counted in there?
He is counted in there.
Oh, that's horseshit.
Like, he's 8. He's right before Christopher Eccleston.
Oh, you guys are crazy.
So, No. I'm not a Whovian.
You are.
I'm not.
You are. You heard it here first at this movie. We got so off topic. We got to go. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Patrick.
I'm sorry for being a huge nerd.
No, this is very entertaining.
I appreciate it. I feel safe here. This is a safe place with you, and I appreciate that.
No problem.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And always date someone who likes our show.
Yeah, it's good advice.
Mike, take us out.
The bridge is yours, number one. If you were any other basement, I would kill you where you stand.